It's Tuesday, July 28th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, U.S. President Barack Obama tells the African Union that Africa's progress depends upon development and democracy.
I believe Africa's progress will also depend on democracy, because Africans, like people everywhere, deserve the dignity of being in control of their own lives.
Chinese stocks continue to fall, and we'll hear about Tyrese's new CD, Black Rose. It's all ahead. In his farewell speech following a historic trip to Kenya and Ethiopia, U.S. President Barack Obama hailed Africa's extraordinary progress. He noted in a speech to the African Union in Addis Ababa that such progress can only be sustained through continued development and democracy for all.
Today, Africa is one of the fastest growing regions in the world. Africa's middle class is projected to grow to more than 1 billion consumers, with hundreds of millions of mobile phones, surging access to the internet. Africans are beginning to leapfrog old technologies into new prosperity. Africa is on the move. A new Africa is emerging.
Mr. Obama also spoke of the importance of civil societies.
I believe Africa's progress will also depend on democracy, because Africans, like people everywhere, deserve the dignity of being in control of their own lives. We all know what the ingredients of real democracy are. They include free and fair elections, but also freedom of speech and the press, freedom of assembly. These rights are universal. They're written into African constitutions.
I'm joined now by VOA White House correspondent Aru Pandey, who's traveling with the president in Addis Ababa. Well, Aru, Mr. Obama gave certainly an upbeat assessment of the African continent, particularly in regards to economic development.
Yeah, he talked extensively about how Africa has basically shedding its the challenges that it's had in its history and the impressions that people have had of extreme poverty. And he's talked about how this is a new Africa, that Africa is on the move. And he talked at length about how so many countries are investing in Africa because there's so many opportunities here. But it was clear that in order to sustain this progress and growth, then there needs to be changes made on the continent.
Yeah, and I think some of those changes, he spoke also in regard to the importance of democracy, and he mentioned that his term as president is coming to an end because of term limits, kind of a veiled comment about some presidents, some leaders in Africa who stay on for decades.
Right, well, I tell you what, sitting here in the audience of the African Union, already history is being made as he's the first U.S. President to be here at the African Union headquarters and addressing his speech. But I was listening to people applaud and cheer and murmur in agreement. And he was talking about the fact that democracy is not just formal elections. Just because you have elections and people are democratically elected doesn't mean that, you know, everything is done and okay. When he mentioned journalists being behind bars for doing their jobs, that hit home, particularly here in Ethiopia. That was the focus of his talks with the prime minister yesterday. It was so much, and especially when he was joking about, I don't understand why African leaders would want to stay on after their terms end. And he talked about how, you know, I think I'm doing a pretty good job, but, you know, I'm ready to move on. And he got so much applause and laughter and cheers when he talked particularly about those issues about, like you said, freedom of speech, a freedom of press, and really giving democracy to the people after the election is over.
He also spoke about women's rights.
That's right. He did. And he spoke at length in Kenya about the importance of really empowering women and girls, and basically ending old age practices like genital mutilation, sexual assault, things like that. And he repeated that call again today in his address. He ended his address with basically saying that if you empower women, basically empowering the entire nation, and that That's really the key to not only, you know, a nation's growth, but the entire continent's growth. So the real message from this speech was, look, Africa is on the move, it is progressing, but there are some challenges that need to be addressed, whether it be equal rights, democracy, government, corruption, and once those are addressed, then you're truly on the right path.
All right. Thanks very much, Aru. That's White House correspondent Aru Pandey reporting from Addis Ababa. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's been the reaction to Mr. Obama's speech?
Well, the big word is historic, as Aru just mentioned, as the first president to go to the African Union and speak there. I've actually been following along as Aru's been tweeting about the speech with some of the good quotes that she mentioned. People taking a lot of those quotes and using them on social media, resonating with a lot of people about democracy. Nobody should be president for life. That one quote was being used a lot. And a lot of topics over the course of this trip have resonated with Africans on social media, especially in terms of economy, terrorism, and security. But it's been interesting, a lot of social media reaction, strong social media reaction to President Obama's calls for gay rights and understanding for gay people, people not as receptive to that message and making that very clearly known on social media. Of course, across Africa, that's a big issue, a controversial issue, not just in Kenya and Ethiopia, but continent-wide. So that's been kind of where the lay of the land has been on social media as far as this trip goes, and we'll see, I'm sure, some more comments post-trip, some post-trip analysis and things as the president comes back to the U.S., hopes for the future now that he's gone to Africa, gone to Kenya and Ethiopia. Back here in the U.S., I found an article this morning from the Los Angeles Times that I thought was very interesting about gang violence. And in Los Angeles, gangs are a big problem, as they are in many cities, but as police are saying in this article, gangs don't spray paint the side of buildings to send warnings anymore. They're doing it on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. And there's been a bit of gang violence in Los Angeles that inspired this hashtag 100 days and 100 nights where there was a shooting and these gangs are vowing vengeance and violence. So it's very interesting how they're taking to social media and this kind of new frontier of communication to get their message across. So maybe not the best use of social media, but in another case, on the other side of the U.S., in the city of Boston, maybe a better use of social media, Boston was bidding for the 2024 Olympic Games, and the mayor of Boston is a big proponent of these games, the citizens not so much. And the mayor of Boston had this quote where he said, oh, well, it's the opposition's only about 10 people on Twitter, so it's not really a big deal. Well, this set off this hashtag 10 people on Twitter, where people are going and saying, actually, Mr. Mayor, this is what we really think, getting their voices heard. And then we have word late yesterday that Boston's actually pulling its bid for the Olympics. So all that talk on social media actually inspired some action. People's voices were heard. And the end result was, I guess, what they wanted.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I happened to be in Boston yesterday, and there was a lot of talk about it.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks very much. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Well, in other news, Malaysia moved up one notch to the second tier of the U.S. State Department's annual Trafficking in Persons report, covering 188 governments despite objections from human rights campaigners and a substantial portion of the U.S. Congress. VOA correspondent Steve Herman reports from our Southeast Asia Bureau in Bangkok.
The Obama administration elevated politics over the most basic principles of human rights, according to U.S. Senator Robert Menendez, a Democrat from the state of New Jersey, who in a statement vows to challenge the upgrade. The change in ranking for Malaysia is seen as removing a barrier to the country's participation in the U.S.-led 12-nation Trans-Pacific Partnership. Final negotiations on the trade pact are underway in Hawaii. Malaysian opposition lawmaker Ong Kian Ming says, despite what the State Department asserts, the human trafficking situation in his country has not improved.
I don't really see a very strong reason why Malaysia should be given an upgrade, whereas Thailand doesn't. So I think Senator Menendez and his colleagues should be listened to, and I hope more information comes out during whatever Senate hearings they may call.
Congress approved legislation in June giving President Obama expanded trade negotiating powers but prohibiting deals with Tier 3 countries. The 2015 report declares Malaysia made significant efforts to comply with TIP standards by increasing investigations and prosecutions. But it also expresses concern for the disproportionately low number of convictions compared to the large scale of the human trafficking problem in the country. A former U.S. ambassador to Malaysia, John Mallett, characterizes the TIP report's Malaysia evaluation as contradicting itself.
It almost gives the impression that somebody just decided, well, we have to use the terminology significant effort because that's the legal requirement. But it's not supported by the words that they used, the statistics that they used, or the facts that they used in their own narrative.
Thailand, as expected, remained one of 23 countries, including North Korea, placed on the bottom rung. Thailand's Foreign Affairs Ministry says it strongly disagrees with the U.S. decision to keep it on Tier 3, as it fails to take into account significant efforts undertaken by the Thai government on all fronts during the past year. Steve Herman, VOA News, Bangkok.
This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Scientists have developed some advanced technologies that have made it possible for the first time to read parts of a badly burned 1,500-year-old scroll. The scroll, written in Hebrew, was discovered in 1970 inside the Holy Ark of the synagogue at Ein Gedi, Israel. Due to its charred condition, experts say that up until now it wasn't possible to either preserve or decipher it. But it was made readable again through the use of high-resolution scanning and an innovative new virtual unwrapping tool developed by Professor Brent Seals from the University of Kentucky. The scroll contains the beginning of the Book of Leviticus, and experts say that it's the most ancient scroll from the five books of the Hebrew Bible to be found since the Dead Sea Scrolls were first discovered in 1946. I am VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, Tyrese has a new CD, Black Rose, and we'll hear all about it. Chinese stocks fell again Tuesday, with the benchmark Shanghai Index losing nearly 2% and the Shenzhen Index also lower. It follows the worst one-day drop on the Shanghai of nearly 8.5% since 2007. That rattled world markets. All this despite massive government intervention to buy up stock, crack down on short selling, and banning large companies from selling stock. Those measures stabilized the markets for more than 3 weeks. Scott Kennedy, Deputy Director of China Studies at the Washington-based Centers for Strategic and International Studies, tells VOA's Victor Beatty China's overpriced market was in the throes of a massive correction when Beijing decided it was time to intervene.
Even their investors are addicted to Chinese intervention, and that addiction is difficult to break, and more recently, they've stepped it up. And sometimes an addict requires even more drugs to keep them going, and so the level of intervention has actually gone up. And even though they know that they want to break the habit, but actually taking that step to do it is extremely difficult.
Obviously, there is other news out there suggesting a continued weakness in the manufacturing sector. Are they fueling each other?
It's starting to look like the problems in the real economy and in the stock market are feeding off each other. China does have, in my estimation, pretty good economic fundamentals, and they do need to implement a major transition over a long period of time, but they have the wherewithal to do it. But in the short term, they have a really tricky balance to try and keep this thing going forward.
Obviously, this is affecting other markets.
It is to some extent. The American markets on Monday were down about a percentage point, and some of the companies that are most exposed to China saw their stocks fall off a little bit. It's still not as direct an effect on the American financial markets as it would otherwise be, because China's capital markets are still relatively closed, and investors aren't going to be moving money from one to the other so quickly. So it's still a relatively indirect effect on the American economy. It would become a bigger effect if Chinese consumption patterns would change dramatically, would import fewer American goods, or China would need to erect protectionist barriers or depreciate the renminbi to encourage exports more. We haven't seen those trends yet at all. In fact, consumption in China in the first half of the year was up pretty significantly. And so the effect on American consumers, investors, is still quite limited.
Do you expect continued weakness to go through much of this year?
Probably 2015 is not going to be a banner year for the Chinese economy, to say the least. And we can't say for 2016 what that is going to bring either. But we do know that over the medium term, the Chinese central authorities have a plan. It's a plan that makes sense. It's just a very difficult plan to implement because it in some ways requires contractionary policies to make the economy more efficient, to be less energy intensive, to move up the value-added chain. But at the same time, you've got to create 10 million new jobs every year, because even though China has slow population growth on the basis of 1.4 billion people is still 10 million a year.
That's Scott Kennedy of the Centers for Strategic and International Studies. He was speaking with VOA's Victor Beatty. This is VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is International Edition. You might know Tyrese from the Fast and Furious or the Transformers movies, or maybe from his R&B music or modeling career. But he's also involved in an online conflict with two very powerful members of the radio industry. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee about Tyrese's new CD called Black Rose, which made its debut at number one in the music charts.
He's an international superstar, a model, an actor, a musician, and a very handsome man. We're talking about Tyrese. Shauna, he has got a new album, new CD out, and it's apparently just busted all the charts wide open.
Well, yeah, he just released an album called Black Rose. And for the first time in his career, this album has debuted at number one on the Billboard 200 chart. It debuted number one at the top of the R&B charts. It's debuted at number one on international charts. I'll tell you this, as an R&B connoisseur, it is, in my opinion, one of the best R&B albums in the last 10 years.
Cha-ching.
Top to bottom, incredible album. So I'm happy for him because he's been in the game for a long time. This is his seventh album, and he's been working really, really hard trying to gain the kind of recognition that I believe he deserves. And he finally seems to be getting it, but he's a little upset because he's not getting as much as he thinks he should be.
I need your forgiveness and your mercy too. I must be all kind of crazy.
Now, I understand there's like a Twitter war with Martin Seacrest, or there's something that Ty has said about a lack of diversity in the music business?
Well, he posted to his Facebook page an open letter to Ryan Seacrest and Elvis Duran. They're sort of like the two most popular American pop music radio hosts. And so in this open letter, he said, I'm not angry, but I just want to address an issue. And the issue is the lack of diversity in mainstream radio. And what he's saying is he's got this song, Shame, which is a single, which is being played on urban radio, but is not being played on mainstream radio. And the reason he's been given is because it sounds too urban. So he goes on in this letter to say, well, it sounds very much like maybe what Sam Smith is doing. And so why is it that Sam Smith or Robin Thicke or Justin Timberlake can do these very urban sounding songs, R&B soul, when we say urban, that's what we mean, but and get played on mainstream radio, yet I'm relegated to just being played on urban radio, black radio. And so he's just asking this question, and a lot of folks are talking about it online, for one, for fear that he may be alienating himself, because these are two very powerful people in the radio business, and two, wondering whether or not there's something to that.
Well, we welcome your comments on this. You can send a tweet to Shauna, VOA Lady DJ. That's her handle. You can send one to me. I'm David_DBird. Or you can hit her up on VOA_music. Listen for her in the Soul Lounge, www.voanews.com.
I'm ashamed of me, yeah. Baby, I'm ashamed. I'm so sorry, babe. I'm so sorry.
That is the music of Tyrese from his CD called Black Rose. It's interesting how a number of pop stars or music stars seem to be getting in feuds with various other people. That always seems to happen in the entertainment industry. Well, anyway, please look at our website. You can get to it at voanews.com for all the latest about a range of stories. And that's our show. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks very much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States has a long-term commitment to improving human rights conditions in Tibet. One way to help ease tensions in Tibet is for China to resume dialogue with the Dalai Lama or his representatives without preconditions, said U.S. Undersecretary of State for Civilian Security, Democracy, and Human Rights Sarah Sewell. The Dalai Lama has repeatedly said he does not seek independence for Tibet, but instead wants China to ensure the preservation of Tibet's cultural heritage through genuine autonomy within China. In the meantime, the Chinese government's respect for Tibetans' fundamental human rights remains poor. The State Department's 2014 Human Rights Report concluded China engaged in severe repression of Tibet's unique religious, cultural, and linguistic heritage by, among other means, strictly curtailing the civil rights of China's Tibetan population, including the freedoms of speech, religion, association, assembly, and movement. In urging China to improve the situation, Undersecretary Sewell called for China to end the harassment, detention, and other mistreatment of individuals who seek to peacefully practice their religion, express their views, or seek legal redress. We ask for the release of prisoners of conscience and also request that filmmaker Dongdup Wang Shen, who completed his 6-year prison sentence, be allowed to reunite with his family. The State Department's annual International Religious Freedom Report highlighted China's growing interference in the core tenet of Tibetan Buddhism, known as reincarnation. Respecting the basic and universally recognized right of religious freedom demands that any decision on the next Dalai Lama be reserved to the current Dalai Lama, Tibetan Buddhist leaders, and the Tibetan people. The United States also remains concerned about the lack of physical access to Tibet's beautiful landscape and unique culture. Tourists, journalists, and foreign diplomats face significant obstacles in visiting Tibetan areas. The U.S. continues to press the Chinese government to permit greater diplomatic and consular access to Tibet. The United States will continue to push for a resumption of dialogue between Chinese authorities and the Dalai Lama and continue to urge China to respect the rights of Tibetans and protect their unique cultural, linguistic, and ethnic identity.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.